So we can only thank everybody who came today for the Sunday feast, despite the extreme heat, which most of the conditioned souls would spend on a beach, somewhere close to water. So here we are trying to get close more to Bhagavad Gita and to Krishna consciousness by reading today some very special shloka from Bhagavad Gita. This is from the 6th chapter. From the 6th chapter, text 32. Atma upamena sarvatra samam pasyati arjuna sukam vayarivarukam sayogi paramo mata. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who is a Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God. And the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being, the proprietor of all lands and planets, and sincerest friend of all living entities. The perfect yogi knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold material miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. And because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world and he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. Nacha tasman manusheshu kaschim me priyakritamaha. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities, and in this way he is factually the friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit. But he tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man towards Krishna consciousness. So he is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, Arjuna. So to understand this shloka properly, one has to first establish that this world is considered, in a view of Bhagavad Gita, the world of dualities. Right now it's very hot. In a few months, it's going to be very cold. Sometimes we feel happy, sometimes we feel very unhappy. Sometimes we feel disturbed, sometimes we feel peaceful. Sometimes we sit down, sometimes we get up. Sometimes we are hungry, sometimes we are satisfied. This is changing all the time. So happiness and distress is nothing else as another duality, which comes guaranteed. Even we would do nothing now, we would just sit here. Yeah. There would be no external changes. You could just watch yourself becoming slowly unhappy and slowly happy. And slowly unhappy and slowly happy. Just by the movements of your mind, the mind will just move. He is sankalpa vikalpa, this means brings and rejects, brings and rejects, accepts, rejects. So just by the movements of the mind, we will be happy and unhappy. Because the mind will bring bad memories, or good memories, bad memories. We wouldn't do anything, just sit here. You know? So, this is the material world. It's constantly changing. So, in Krishna consciousness, we are not so much concerned with that. Because it comes and goes anyway. Yeah? Actually, when you look backwards in your life, most of the time we rather remember the pleasant moments, the unpleasant ones we, you know, the mind edits all this out, we forget the whole thing. But the pleasant ones, yeah, that's they remember, oh, so nice. Like now is a tourist time. I'm now heading for Croatia, which is, in one sense, in this time of the year, a very hellish place. You know, because it's completely overcrowded with tourists. Tourist is a person who in minimum time wants to enjoy the maximum, but he missed the whole rest of the year. This creates a kind of hysterical, you know, very tense atmosphere, you know. And because everybody tries to enjoy it once, you guarantee end up in misery. Because everybody tries to enjoy it once. That means, you know, everybody wants to eat, sleep, mate, and defend himself all at once and now and real fast, because in 1 week the holiday is over. You know? And that creates a very unpleasant atmosphere. Usually people reach immediately out for intoxication, you know, and then they start to do things they even normally don't do. Or you end up on a beach. It's a wonderful atmosphere, which is so crowded that you cannot even walk. It's just one body lying next to each other, slowly turning red and brown. This is somehow a concert enjoyment. When you just turn yourself like a, you know, like you make a pakora or something like this, you know, it's like, you know, pakora turns brown, it's ready. So they do the same thing with the bodies. They just kind of roast themselves, you know, it's just a ghee walk missing. Actually, the whole beach is like a ghee walk, and they just, you know, and then they just go, you know, and then sometimes they end up in hospital as well, overburned, you know, over-roasted. So somewhat this is considered very enjoyable, and usually the result of this is misery. Prahlad Maharaj is saying, the more you want to enjoy, the more you will suffer. And the more you let it go, it will come on its own term anyway, because it's allotted to us. It's not, nothing is accidental in this world. Everything is exactly, precisely going according to the law of karma. If you are supposed to enjoy tonight, you will. Maybe you try even to prevent not to enjoy. No, you will. Something will make you happy. And then, if you are supposed to suffer, something will make you unhappy. This is the field of action. We have no control over these things. See, people always strive towards happiness. And the more they strive, the more they suffer. You know, especially. And then, ultimately, the happiness in the world is forgetfulness. Forgetfulness. To forget, somehow. That's the reason why people reach out for drugs. Because they make you to forget. You know, forget our real identity, which is the spiritual one, what to speak of the material one, which is really painful. So, to forget the whole thing. That's the real thing. Ignorance is bliss. Yeah? And the drug in itself, on the intoxicant, is actually not enjoyable. Nobody goes, this tastes really nice, heroin. No, it's poison, actually. Drugs means poison. You poison yourself, you kill yourself, actually, in a process. Or even they say alcohol tastes good. Well, when you see people drinking this, it's not very tasty. They just, you can see, they just always go, and then they go, you know. You know, it's like it's undrinkable. Actually, it's you know, it's on the level of something you clean spots away, or you know, petrol or diesel or something like that. You know, some liquid which, but the effect is pleasant. They think, it's in the mind. All sense gratification is in the mind. It's just a mental conception. We think, that's nice. That's nice. But actually, it's not nice. The reality of the story is not nice. So when they come back from the holiday, burnt, they spend all the money, you know, stressed, you know, because they all go back at once, you know, yeah, jammed in cars, it's too hard, distressed, very, very distressed. Then at the end, they think, no, that was a nice holiday. They tell to the neighbors, I was in Hawaii. No, I was in Mallorca. Very nice place, yes. And then all the misery is somehow edited out. So that's the mind. The mind is the biggest cheater. He always cheats us. So in Krishna consciousness, we are extremely alert for the mind. Because the mind makes us do these things. Thinking, and then it's feeling, and then it's desire. This is three levels of consciousness. And that forms our vision. Like, you know, many people come to Copenhagen, but everybody will perceive this town differently. You know, somebody will come here in Copenhagen and goes, yes, Denmark, yes, Tuborg beer, yes. That's what he sees. The other person will not even see this. Another person will think, yeah, it's not much going on here, actually, you know. And the other person, the lusty person, will see only the opposite sex. The hungry person will see only restaurants. You know, that's what you see, because the consciousness is geared towards that. So in Krishna consciousness, we actually train our senses and our mind to perceive actually Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It requires a training, because we are used to perceive other things as reality. This material world for us seems to be a given reality. But it's not. It's changing all the time. Like anybody, there are many guests from India. So maybe they were not even born in Denmark, they were born in India, now they are sitting here. You can say, well, it's a pretty far distance, you know, from India to Denmark, you know, and how did I get here? Why did I came here? Some were even born here already. I said, why was I born here? It's not a chance. This is all not accidental. There is a certain reason. Well, there are millions of people in India, and then some Indians end up in Denmark. As a matter of fact, wherever you go, it's like the global population seems to be just Indians. Because they are everywhere. Everywhere you go, from Russia to Gran Canaria to Spain and everywhere is Indians. They are everywhere. You know, now followed up by Russians, that's another thing. But, you know, but they also everywhere, you know, yeah. So, why? Our karmic destiny leads us to certain places and makes us essentially experience the same, pleasure and pain. Pleasure and pain. So a devotee, this is such a valuable text here, such a valuable shloka. This is actually a very deep shloka, because it's pointing to a vision to which we have on a basis of our realization, generally realization of pain. In a material world, unfortunately, the pain prevails. It's not the pleasure. It's more the pain. And those they understood that, they are coming to Krishna consciousness. One can come to Krishna consciousness out of curiosity, out of pain, out of financial needs, or in a search of transcendental knowledge. But most of us will come because of pain. There is a pain. If you look like preachers and managers, they deal with new people arriving at the door. Well, you know, what you get to hear sometimes, believe me or not, makes you not to sleep very, very peacefully. Some of the karmic destinies people experience are truly ghastly, horrible destinies. You know, what happened to them in a childhood, what happened there, and that pain accumulates, and it leads us, it pushes us towards Krishna consciousness, you know, pushes us. And as more we surrender, it's called pious, a person who are... Actually, there's two kinds of responses to pain. An atheistic person becomes more and more angry. Really angry. Why should I suffer? Why? What kind of God is this who allows so much suffering? You know? And then he suffers even more. Yeah? And this is like a vicious circle, you know, until he just goes, you know, I don't want to hear anything about God. So, next lifetime, Krishna is very merciful. He hears, he sees. Oh, he doesn't want to hear. Nothing. Nothing about Krishna consciousness. Not even a chance to meet a devotee of Krishna. Okay? Then I will give you a body and a place accordingly. This is not going to happen. Like there are creatures living, you know, 3,000 meters down in the ocean. They will never meet a devotee. You know, they just sit there. You know, it's complete dark. Nobody comes there. No problem. No problem with preaching. Nobody will bother you. You just sit there. Or you get you live nicely. You know, you're happy. You also have your share. Happiness there. You think this is nice. You, this is nice. Yeah. Nobody coming. Very good. Yeah. Some people perceive loneliness as happiness. Some people perceive it as a pure pain. This is very relative. So a devotee is somebody who, on a basis of his own experience, develops compassion to the others. This is nothing to do with mundane altruism, because we have here something spiritual. He is actually, he knows that this material help is sometimes a cause of another misery. We have in a philanthropic department plenty of examples how, you know, I remember once upon a time in Germany there was an organization which was trying to help the Indians by starting chicken farms in India. This was considered very charitable, you know, because the chickens make eggs and then you can eat the chickens. And this. The problem is that most of the Indians don't eat the eggs and don't eat the chickens, but they kind of forgot this. They were Westerners, they said, this is good, this is good. But, you know, the Indians were like, what good? I mean, you know, this, most of the money anyway going for these farms was stolen before it even reached anybody. So this is like, you know, so, you know, this is philanthropism. You always end up very often doing exactly the opposite what you intended to do. You know, a person wants to die, you make him to live. Miserable. You know, like once Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, with the devotees being there, they heard the screams from the town. There was a lady which was cooking there in an open fire. They had this big ghee box, you know, and it just flopped over on her. This is one of the most painful things you can experience, hot ghee on the skin. It's incredible. So she was screaming, and then all the people came running to help her. But with all the strength she had, she was picking up stones and throwing it on people as they came to help her. And Prabhupada said, she's right. Because she was afraid they will take her to a hospital outside of the Holy Dham, which is very inauspicious, and she was afraid she will die outside of Vrindavan and not going to be able to go back home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada said, why don't they leave her alone? She doesn't want any help. This is not a help. You know? So, it's actually sometimes with the help of modern medicine, they prolong people's lives endlessly, covered by tubes, and you know, you lie there for months, for years sometimes. For what? Why do you just change your body? That's a real help. If you read it, just materially spoken, it's better to have a baby body as to have a body of a, you know, of an unconscious invalid lying there for years. You know, if you really think materially spoken, and of course the best help is to help a person that he gets no material body at all. No more birth, no more old age, no more disease. That's the best help. But people think, no, this is just belief, this is religion. Nevertheless, just pragmatically spoken, devotee on a basis of his own pain, he tries to introduce other Krishna consciousness because he already experienced how much help he gets now, right? Now. No future life, no future promises, no. Devotees live a life, sometimes such a life, they forget completely what the benefits they have. You know, you get so easy used to benefits, you know. Like those they preach, people think this is very austere. You go to people and they don't believe you, and you go out there and you redistribute these books. This is considered such an austerity, hardly anybody wants to do this. But it's one of the most simplest activities you can do. You just go on the street and go, hello, take one of these books. And they go yes or no. So if they go no, you go to the next one. It's as simple as that. Because you don't depend on them. We don't depend on people, we depend on Krishna. And when they go, yes, what it is, then you have to do certain things. I could start right now some little introduction to this activity. And you will see, it's very simple. It's you know, and it's very blissful. I experience new people starting distributing these books, distributing one of these books, becoming so uncontrolled, ecstatic, and so happy, they didn't even know what's happening to them. What's happening to them? They were just, what was that? Because that happiness comes from inside. That happiness comes from Krishna's happiness. And this is actually what Krishna consciousness is about. As we try to make ourselves happy, well, we will become more miserable. If you try to make Krishna happy, then suddenly we are completely happy ourselves. Because this is our constitutional position. That's where we belong. So a devotee knows that. So he is the biggest well-wishing friend of everybody. Because regardless if they want this or not, he's introducing them to Krishna consciousness. And we have many means to do that. Prabhupada gave us so many nice means. People take prasadam. That's practically anybody can do. Even people sometimes they think, no, I hate these books, but this tastes good. So that's, you know, that's also Krishna in that form. Or we have the holy name that they have to hear. When we go on the streets, they will hear it one way or another, and we chant loudly. And above all, one can preach through one's example. So, as the face of our preaching slightly changed, not changed, but it got enlarged. You see, when I joined this movement, there was no Indians. I didn't know Indians, and I didn't know what it means, something which is called today congregation or something like that. We were just a bunch of pink guys, saffron, you know, everybody was brahmachari, and nobody was married. And we just ran the whole day on the street distributing these books and chanting Hare Krishna and preaching. This was completely abstract, to get married or to have a family. And I absolutely, when children, I had a problem with this. I was distributing for 15 years these books on the street. When I approached, you know, some young ladies with children, the children, just by seeing me, you know, start to cry. I was going, hello! And the children were going, yeah! And the whole thing was ruined, you know. The mother was going, you know. Because children are very expert to read, you know, your subtle body. They are very intuitive. They know, this is a monk, you know. He's not so nice, you know. He is not understanding the problems of childhood, you know. And they immediately go, wah! Yeah, they immediately take distance. Later on it started, someone had to change. So I got some indication that maybe I should change to another ashrama, you know, yeah, which finally happened. Now I have exactly the opposite problem. You know, I have a children kind of gluing to me on the way. I don't know, something changed there. They can also, you know. But nevertheless, yeah, this is a devotee's life. As we go through our pains and pleasures, Krishna consciousness is meant to actually understand it in a Krishna conscious way and share it with others. We can even share our pain, yeah. Are you suffering in the material world? Yes, me too. And therefore, the conclusion is, we should all chant more Hare Krishna. And pain is a big teacher. It's a very effective preacher. Actually, pleasure, it's more than going direction illusion in this world. You always, like if you are not going to die, isn't it? You know, especially when you are young, nobody who is young believes I'm going to die. They all think, later. It's not for me, but death is always here, just around the corner. It's material world, it's called Mrityu Loka. It's a place where everybody dies. Later on in our lives, we start to understand that. Oh yeah, I know. It's something is changing here. Like many of my god brothers already, they are not even here. They just left. I cannot meet them anymore. I cannot go and call Sridhar Maharaj. I cannot go and call so many actually. Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I cannot just go Hare Krishna, Hare Bol. They are, you know, in the spiritual world, they are doing their thing. So this is the material world. We all disappear one after another. It's just tomorrow there's few less. And then few more come, and then few less. Few more come. It's changing all the time. It's not a permanent residence place. Sometimes people struggle for a permanent residence in Denmark. You know, permanent residence in Denmark. Well, nobody has permanent residence in Denmark. Not even the Danish people have permanent residence, because they all will die. You know. You can get, you know, maybe a more lasting graveyard stone. Here lies the one who was struggling for permanent residence. But he is gone. He is not there. It's just a bunch of leftovers, bones, or ashes. Finished. Over. So knowing that, a devotee really feels compassion upon those who don't know that. Who strive aimlessly to struggle for this permanent pleasure. But there is no permanent pleasure. The pleasure is so flickering and very subjective. If somebody likes something, the other one will not like it. And here we have already a problem. You know, like there's a constant struggle between male and female, because they have very often very different perception of pleasure. You know, in a female department it's more colorful and more deeper, emotional. Men are usually not like that. They are like, you know, instant pleasure and anyway, let's do some action here, you know, yeah. Ladies, they can just sit and talk and dream. They just go, they flow, and man goes, ah, they are talking again. Well, there's nothing happening here. It's boring. Yeah? Men, they have to always do something physical or plan something with the mind. They have to schedule and construct, make a program and concept and to go for it. And the ladies always go, oh, this is too much. And this is so much thinking and so much planning. And look at the roses. Yeah. And the men will go, yeah, they need to be cut. You know, this is where you have the problem. You can never get it together. It's very subjective. It's not, you know, it's not, it's impossible. So this is somehow, you can wonder, how did Krishna reach that? Only in a spiritual world you come in a harmony. Even there are conflicts there too, but ecstatic conflicts. I want to serve Krishna like this. No, I think Krishna wants this, and Krishna like competition. But this is ecstatic. Here is confusion and quarrel, especially in this age of Kali. There is always one member more present right away here, even in a temple, and that's Kali. He is always just around the corner, and he waits who is going to be showing some weakness. As soon as there is a weakness, he's right away there. Yes, yes, yes. Tell him. Go for a conflict. As we described today in the morning, in Kali Yuga, one of the biggest equipment people have this finger. And they are anytime ready to point to somebody with a finger. You, because of you, I don't enjoy. You. That's Kali Yuga. Everybody is like this. You. You know? And the other one just, yeah. And even you don't point anything, they think he will point Zoom. I know that. That don't think that I have anything to do with you. Therefore, impersonal systems and Mayavada is so popular because it seems to provide the peace. I don't exist, you don't exist. We don't exist, right? Or we are all one. That's also the same thing like saying I don't exist. Because you are me, I am you, we are all one and the same and this. Peace. It's all one. Srila Prabhupada, even hearing his own disciples quarreling, he used it immediately in a constructive way. He said, just see, it's not all one. They have a different opinion. I disagree. But of course, it shouldn't go so far in Krishna consciousness that we disagree to the degree we cannot do anything anymore. That's not the point. We have to somewhere agree to serve Krishna, and somewhere we have to come to the point to do something for Krishna. That's the real thing. So, as the external face of Krishna consciousness a little bit changed in that regard, nowadays when we travel around, we don't have just, you know, brahmachari sitting there and doing their service 24 hours a day. We have people coming from all, you know, ranges of society. And, I mean, for me personally, this is very, very interesting because I tell you quite frankly, I don't know anything about the society. I never was there. I tuned out of it when I was 18 years old. That means I never entered it. I never had one job in my life. I don't know, maybe still I have to. Because after all, I still have a family, I have to do the needful. But in my age, to find a job is already quite, you know, quite difficult. But maybe I have to. I will do the needful to survive. But so far, I didn't have to do that. Potentially, Prabhupada said, all devotees are lazy people. That's the first qualification of a devotee. He's lazy. On a material platform. Spiritually, exactly opposite. Very busy. But materially, it's always the question, well, shall I do this? For what? Well, go! You will buy yourself a big new car! And the devotee goes, yeah. For what? Why shall I do this? It's like the whole material life is actually, when you look in detail, all arranged around preparing for the ultimate sanskritification. It's lifetime in preparation for sanskritification. But it never comes. That's Maya's trick. You know, this famous example, how you can manage a donkey, an ass. It's quite simple. You have a stick, And at the end of the stick you hang a carrot, you know. And then you hang it in front of the mouth of the donkey. And the donkey goes, "Carrot! Wow!" And he thinks, if I make one step, I will bite into this. You keep it close. And then he goes. But you keep it, the carrot always in front of him. And then you can direct him, right, left, you know, faster, slower, you know, and he will go. And at the end, even, it's recyclable carrot, you can put it in a pocket and he goes, the carrot is gone. And then he stands there. So that's how you can manage. That's actually how Maya is managing the conditioned souls. We are always getting ready for the ultimate pleasure, but never comes. It's always something missing. There is something missing, which is not there. And Maya goes, good, you did a pretty good job. You worked so hard. Now you have to do a little bit harder, a little bit more, so you can get there. And at the end, then you know, the living entities are completely finished, just running, you know, then comes the ultimate reward, and that's called death. You know, in the process, we die going, oh no, I'm dying, but I just needed this much more. Please, 1 year more. There are people like that. Maya goes, sorry, not 1 year more, nothing more. Maybe next lifetime. What do you think about that? Yes, yes, please, yes, yes. And then we recycle the whole thing, and we go again, 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 again. That's cheating. So devotees are lazy for this. They don't want to take part in this. Why should I? You know, yeah. This is what always the materialist accuses, preaches. You make people non-productive. Why? Because they kind of feel not so enthusiastic to take part in that race. And Prabhupada said it's natural. But on the other side, devotees become very busy in devotional service. I mean, I remember many parents I met which were shocked what their children started doing in Krishna consciousness, including myself. I was a fairly useless person before I joined, really useless. Just dreaming and, you know, and speculating. And then after some years, my parents never wanted to listen to any preaching. It was the biggest mistake I could make, to preach to them. But just by seeing how I'm living, what I'm doing, they were like, became very respectful actually, because they said, my God, who's teaching you all this? And I said, nobody, because the best teacher is actually inspiration. If you're inspired, you learn things very fast. If you like to do something, and if you're inspired, very quickly it comes. But if you're not inspired, you can learn the whole life, you become anyway a fool. Because it's just, you know, doesn't inspire you, doesn't motivate you. So Krishna consciousness is about inspiration, about motivation, and about compassion. True compassion means, whatever I got, I want to share with others. This is a nice feeling. This is a nice attitude. This is how actually one should be like that. If one gets something nice, one should share it with others. And Krishna consciousness is the more you share, the more you give, the more you get. This is actually what it is. Spiritual mathematics means 1 minus 1 is 2. And 2 minus 2 is 4. It is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The more Panchatattva and Lord Chaitanya spread Krishna consciousness, the more it was there. So the more you empty it out, the more you get. In a material sense, well, if you empty it out, there's nothing left. But no. In Krishna consciousness, it's opposite. So if we don't learn how to give Krishna consciousness, we will not get it much. We can try to clinch to some kind of private Krishna consciousness. You know, we can make our private. But it will not have the same taste as if you give it. This is a Sankirtan movement. Sankirtan movement means giving. All the time giving out. In whatever capacity we have. Therefore we strongly advocate to actually give out Srila Prabhupada's books in any capacity we have. Because this is permanent. If somebody gets a Bhagavad Gita at home, if somebody gets a book at home, that book is preaching on its own. It's a living, walking preacher. We had experience of this. Many devotees came to this movement. They got from book from somewhere, from somebody, who got it from somebody else. They don't even know where it came from. It was just here. So Srila Prabhupada was very much stressing this, to give out literature, because this is a permanent contribution. This stays there for 100 years. We can be all gone, but the book is still there. Somebody will pick it up and going, "Whoa, this is interesting." So this is very, this is actually true compassion. And true compassion, this is a big term, because true compassion also involves that we keep our lives intact. That we actually preach in such a way that people don't find any hypocrisy in us. They don't think, "Yeah, well, you are preaching this, but how are you living actually? Look at this." And I mean, religions are full of hypocrisy. Tradition, you know, where people, that's how people become atheists. They think, "Oh no, I saw enough cheating in the name of religion. You know, I don't want to see this anymore. I don't believe in God," because they take it like from the institutional point of view. But here we have a philosophical thing. And here we have a description of a perfect yogi. Yogi means yoga, and we could give now many hours and go very much in detail. What yoga means in Kali Yuga, standing on the street and preaching Krishna consciousness. This is the real yoga. Like, what is the objective of yoga? Yoga means to unite with God, to combine, to link up with God. Yoga. That means that. Well, that's what you are doing. When you speak about God and you preach about God, well, you are linking up with God. No matter how much close we want to get. That's real yoga. And if you do it in the middle of, you could say, inimical environment, where people are not inclined to hear, that then you have to control your anger, you have to control your senses, you have to control your mind. Well, that's all yoga. That's all part of yoga. Srila Prabhupada was quite averse to this kind of sitting posture things, and he called it pushing nose, you know, following in the footsteps of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who said yoga is not gymnastics, you know, just the physical exercises in some secluded place. Yes, it may be beneficial for that person who is doing this, but who else is benefiting? On top of that, today, in these days, to do such a thing, very difficult. You can go in Himalaya up there, trying to be alone, practice yoga. Well, it's not so easy to be alone even in Himalaya today. You know, in a secluded place, holy place, alone. You can sit there, meditate, and some mountain climber comes up, you know, makes a picture, you know. Yeah. Or something will fall on your head from all the airplanes which are flying over Himalaya, you know, and they drop the waste just over Himalaya. You can, you know, and there's an airplane here flying, there's people crawling here, there's so many things. It's a very disturbing time for that kind of process. So Bhakti Yoga means, the true yoga means, you go in a shopping street, you sit in a city, you preach in a city. This is real yoga. Prabhupada strongly advocated it, and he showed the example. He could have stayed peacefully in Vrindavan. He could have stayed in India and died there peacefully in Krishna consciousness. No. He got on a boat, died almost there, came to a crazy country he never saw before, encountering crazy people, you know, he never saw before. Yeah. And he was just preaching, and that is the highest yoga. You know. So Prabhupada is extremely exemplary in all his example. You know, he was preaching even as a grihastha. You know, even he had his job, he had his thing. He was still in this preaching mood all the time. Always in a preaching mood. Prabhupada said, "I was in a preaching mood even before I met my spiritual master. I was preaching in a school. I was preaching to everyone. I always had something to say. I wanted to have something to say. But of course, after I met my spiritual master, then I had really something to say." You know. So this is actually a mood of a devotee. This is the real yoga, and this is the real compassion, drawn from one's own experiences. Like, you know, I joined this movement when I was 18. I was going, "We are not this body, yes. We are not, you know, we are, everybody has to die, yes." Well, from today's perspective, I say exactly the same things, but it sounds different to me. I feel more closer to these kind of things, because the pain was already there, and it is here right now. And it's more perceived, it's more realized, it's more... And I have a long way to go to really become compassionate and really understand. That's what makes me miserable, makes the other people exactly miserable also. It's not a big difference. It's no difference at all. We all suffer for the same reason. Forgetfulness of Krishna, lack of Krishna consciousness. And the same adibhutik, adevik, adiatmik. From other living entities, from our own body, and from supernatural powers, we receive so much pain. Nobody is excluded. We are all sitting in the same boat. It's just the timing schedule is different. When he maybe suffers more, the other one doesn't suffer so much. And Prabhupada actually was very realistically saying that pleasure actually is just a momentary cessation of pain. It's like a man who stands on a wall and he bangs his head against the wall. Why? Nobody knows. When they ask him, why are you doing this? Then he says, you know, because when I stop, it feels so good. So this is actually essentially the concept of pleasure in the material world. Just we don't feel for that moment that pain so much. We think, oh, I am happy, I am happy. But it starts already again, again, again. Bhayam, fear, when does it stop? When does it flop? You know, the happiness in the material world is like a, described like a drop of water on the lotus leaf. You know, lotus leaf, this is very impregnated. So the water doesn't stay for long. So little shaking, the water falls off again. Little change, we flop from pleasure to pain, immediately. So this is to be realized in Krishna consciousness. We are already living this kind of lives. It's just a question of understanding it properly and draw the right conclusion that because I suffer so much, Prahlad Maharaj is saying, how much more they must suffer? I suffer while trying to be in Krishna consciousness so much. Well, how much more they must suffer without Krishna consciousness? And that motivates a preacher. So anybody can be a preacher in a very simple way. Anybody can take part in preaching, anybody can spread Krishna consciousness on the basis of his own experience. That's the best preaching. Otherwise, we can learn shlokas, we can learn so much. Nowadays, very much focus is given on the academic side. We can learn so much things, but where is the reality? You know, I mean, yeah, one can talk about so many things, but where is the reality? Reality is, what is my position? Where do I sit now? And where are these people? How much do they suffer? So this is actually how Krishna consciousness is the most realistic and pragmatic approach to life. Because it's dealing with a very basic, essential problem. And Prabhupada repeated that over and over again. We are going to die. Birth, death, old age and disease. That's the problem. Not the political problem, social problem, emotional problem. How do you feel? Well, I'm dying. Prabhupada was especially in the later portion of his life, he was going, it's annoying, I'm here lying on my deathbed, and there's people come in, how are you? Well, I'm dying, you know. What kind of question is, how are you? It's obvious, I'm dying. You know, this is reality. So Prabhupada said in a certain point, no more visitors. They're all coming, how are you? But then again, next minute he said, no, they can all come. Because he was actually wanted to connect them to Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gave the example to the last second of his life. The door was open. All the great acharyas before him, they usually went in a samadhi before they left this planet. That means bhajan, in a secluded place. You know, Prabhupada didn't do that. To the last minute, he was lying there completely at the disposal of his disciples, of the guests, you know, in a public view, he practically left the body. This is acharya. This is what he wanted to teach us. Like one of these most dramatic scenes before he was leaving the body, just a few days, or one day before, devotees were standing around his deathbed, and of course very moaning, very sad. Prabhupada suddenly opened the eyes and he said, and don't think this will not happen to you. This was the most short and most precise lectures they ever heard. They all realized, oh, sooner or later I will be lying like this. And then it's finished and over. That's the reality. And that's, we don't take it in a depressing way. No, that actually makes devotee optimistic, inspired. Because I'm going to die, I have to focus more on Krishna consciousness. Because I'm going to die, I have to spread more Krishna consciousness. This is not a depressing news. Like before I joined here, somewhat from my previous life or whatever, I had very deep feeling about this. From my childhood, from my early childhood. I always thought I will die. It's very strange for a child because children are like usually the endless optimists, you know. But no, I was always quiet and I was always thinking, you know, my parents were desperate, you know. He has no friends, nothing. He doesn't even talk. Believe me or not, I was not talking. I was just... And then I had my little miniature world, you know. I had a completely closed up world. You know. So I was thinking, this child is strange. You know. I didn't find any inspiration. And this guy was like, what? All the kids were too loud to me, and you know, screaming and running back and forth. And of course, I was also playing something, but it was not, it's not so inspiring. So when I first time met devotees, I found devotees extremely naive. They were all happy, laughing, dancing. I thought, this cannot be. This is... So I first time I came to the temple, I told devotees, you know, I can see you are all happy and you are enjoying it here, but you know, you will all die. And they were going, yeah! And they were even more happy. I was shocked. I was thinking, these people, either they are mad, because madmen are like this. You tell a madman, you will die, and he goes, you know, it's okay. Or they have something I never saw before. And that was very attractive. I said, they are laughing beyond death, because obviously they know very well they will die. And they are even happy about that. And they're chanting, so this is amazing. I never met this before. Because before, usually I had even a so-called friend who had a similar type of realization, so we were like a team. We could ruin anybody's happiness instantly. We were walking around students, you know. So in the student world, the hedonism is always like the top goal, you know. So whenever there was some party and they were all, ha, 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 and we came, you know, you will all die. So, you know, so we were so famous, when we showed up, they immediately kicked us out. They said, no, 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 not this, you know, no, no, get out, get out, get out. Because we could ruin anybody's happiness with our, you are all going to die, you know, statements. That usually it's not very popular in the material world to broadcast something like that. But this is actually where Krishna consciousness starts. That's the reality. And we have something positive. We have something more to give. It's actually inspiring news. Die. Prabhupada said, one year finished, over, never come back. This is actually, therefore, actually, when a Vaishnava leaves the body, it is celebrated. It is not mourned, of course. Prabhupada said it's not nice to leave somebody or lose somebody's association. That's one part. But when he died in Krishna consciousness, this is a reason to celebrate, not to be sad, because he went back home to Godhead. So this is a true charity. This is actually a true humanitarian work, to bring people to the point they never return to this world.